Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week I get joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team. And this week, I've only got John.
Sorry about that, but hello.
It's wonderful to have John along, of course, questionnaire extraordinaire. And every week we get to speak to some of the innovators, pioneers and collaborators. And there's an infinite emphasis on pioneer this week in Charlotte Argue from Geotab. Welcome, Charlotte.
Thank you. Yeah, thanks for inviting me on.
Hey, it is our pleasure, and particularly because I'm going to read your introduction now, of course. And it says, Charlotte Argue is a senior manager, sustainable mobility at Geotab, a global leader in telematics. And we'll talk about all of that in due course. Charlotte's focus is on enabling fleets in their transition to electric with data-driven insights and sharing aggregated insights to inform large-scale vehicle electrification strategies. And you have been involved in electric transportation since 2009. Prior to your work at Geotab, you managed sustainable transport programs at the Fraser Basin Council, a not-for-profit organization in British Columbia, helped launch a plug-in in BC. Plug-in BC. There you go. Which is, of course, for British Columbia, which is where you live and are from. A multi-stakeholder initiative supporting electrification. And there you did that at a national green fleet rating program, collaborated on electrification initiatives across the Pacific coast. I'll need to put my teeth in, and managed several provincial incentive programs for EV charging deployment, including multi-unit residential public L2 and DCFC and fleet charging. And she also co-established one of North America's first EV outreach programs. And you've also been long-time member of Electric Mobility Canada and is the BC chapter for chair of Women in EVs. So, I mean, do you have any spare time?
Yeah, I have some spare time. This was over several years, so I didn't do it all at once.
Oh, brilliant. But it seems that it was in your blood, really, from early doors, really before electrification was even trendy, you were doing this. What got you there?
Oh, gosh. Yeah, in my blood is probably the right phrase because, I grew up with environmentally minded parents. So it was really in my genes. I always knew that I wanted to do something related to helping the planet and making a positive impact. So it was just part of like the natural step. And I went to university for environmental sciences. So I did sciences and I specialized in atmospheric sciences within that. So yeah, climate change was definitely a target right from university. And actually pre-university, I remember doing a high school report on the Kyoto Protocol. So I was always really interested in climate change. I think the ozone hole prior to climate change and acid rain, that was impactful to me when I was in elementary school. So yeah, I just always was sad to hear that we were polluting the world or that we were destroying habitats and making animals go extinct. So it's just been a passion of mine to make positive change.
Fantastic. Another one of our number, Sarah, who you probably have seen online and maybe have spoken to at some point, but Sarah Sloman also reported in a podcast we did with her, I think crying, the result of acid rain. I specifically remember just kind of really, really feeling very sad. I think you used that word sad at the sort of damage that was being occurred to the planet or was occurring in the planet. What was it about your parents really that kind of exemplified this kind of start in life?
Oh my gosh. So my mom was designing and constructing super insulated, energy efficient homes way back in the 70s and 80s using passive solar. Like she was a pioneer herself. and to, yeah, she was building homes to withstand Canadian winters, using as little energy as possible. So yeah, she and she was also involved, back then in the organic foods movement. My dad, he was an environmental consultant, and he brought the first blue box, recycling program to our region. So yeah, recycling was always part of our household before, you know, recycling was really part of most people's or anyone's household. And I grew up in the country as well. So just being in nature, playing outside all the time. Yeah, it just helped. It just was always natural that, you know, we're part of this world, and, you know, there's an impact. One thing that we do over here has an impact over there. So, but yeah, my parents were definitely strong forces in my life.
Charlotte, were you, because this was way back when, were you a weird child? Did you have...
I've got a t-shirt with weird fish written
on it.
And
then maybe that's what stimulated it. And that's a genuine question. When I was at school, I used to worry about nature. So bugs and things were really important to me. And living outside was a key part of my growing up. And I always felt that I was different to others. Did you feel that you were different, or were you embraced in an environment where how you lived and what you stood for was valued outside of your family?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Sometimes I look back and wonder why I wasn't bullied or why I didn't have friends. Like, oh, people just accepted me. That's nice. Yeah, I don't know. I was a bit of a little bit of a dork. But I also, you know, played sports. I was on the soccer team, and in high school, the club that I was part of was Envirothon. So it was like just a group of five of us who learned about, you know, different parts of, you know, forestry and aquatic life, and that we would compete as a school, and we ended up winning our regions and getting to go down to Massachusetts to compete. So that was really exciting. But I don't know. I feel like I was fairly well-rounded.
Yeah. But you are, I mean, Paul used the word pioneer, but you truly were. Yeah. I mean, way back in the day when, you know, I'm significantly older than you, but I was weird. I was a weird child because I went and played with, you know, frogs and stuff. Just odd.
Just on that, my sister ended up having a career in herpetology, so snakes and reptiles.
I confess to something now. At night, I sit and I watch herpetologists in the Amazon rainforest going out and finding the most strange and bizarre snakes that they can find, the most deadly snakes. That fascinates me to this day. And it's something which I haven't shared with the EV Cafe guys a lot, but we are a unique band of people who actually, we feel this connection to the environment, which perhaps others don't. We are very close to it. Is that something which comes from your parents, do you think, or irrespective of them, you'd have gone off and done this anyway?
Nature versus nurture, and yeah, it's I have both there. It's so hard to tell. I feel like it's just part of me. So it's so, I want to say it would have happened regardless. But maybe there were some environmental genes that came into me that weren't around.
And if climate science was proved to be a load of old hooey, it's just a conspiracy, would you start driving a V8 and burning fossil fuels because it didn't matter? Or do you just not care about that stuff? You feel this need to protect and to be sparing with the resources that you use.
I think that's an obvious answer.
Yeah, maybe. Sometimes I do obvious.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't go off saying, well, this doesn't matter anymore. Let's just be wasteful. But yeah, I do remember getting upset or not understanding why not everyone saw it that way. Yeah. And, you know, why are you just idling your car in front and you could be turning it off, and or throwing something not in the recycling bin. It's like, but it's so easy, and you can't, don't you know that this can be then used for a new material and how someone doesn't have to go mine some more. So yeah, I would get, just kind of more confused and I wouldn't understand why others didn't think the same way, I guess.
It's incredible listening to you guys, because honestly, and John knows my story. Listen, I wouldn't have known acid rain from acid back when I was a kid, and you know, the drug acid. but it was, I'm later to this, but I was probably a bit more technology led, and then the bit that got me passionate was more about the air quality. And I love nature, so I grew up like reading books about, you know, adventures in the Amazon and stuff like that, you know, kind of finding two-headed snakes and all that kind of stuff. And it was exciting, but you know, I'm later to this, and you know, now we've got the technology that's here, that's around electric vehicles, and in particular, just the air quality benefits. So there's a story we have here. It's not a story, it's a true story here in the UK about a young lady called Ella. And Ella unfortunately died in 2013 of an asthma attack, which in 2020 was attributed directly to air quality based in London. So she was in London. She died as a result of the air quality that was around her. So that's what gets me impassioned and angry that somebody's life was cut short, and many lives are cut short. But kind of leads me to one of the things that, you know, we think about when we think about electric vehicles. We think about batteries, and we think about all the people that are dying in mines, and all the, you know, the mistreatment of precious resources and environment and all of that sort of stuff. Where do you stand on that? What is your feeling about that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one, because it ends up polarizing people, I think. And it's not black and white. There's no perfect answer. Anything we do has an impact. Anything we consume has an impact. And so looking at it holistically and thinking about, you know, the life cycle is really important. And so, yeah, I don't recommend people to shy away from that question and being critical about, okay, well, but where are the materials from the batteries coming from? But at the same time, what's not healthy is using that as an excuse not to take action. And we know that, you know, this industry is very new, and we know that, you know, one of the main drivers for going there is environmental, is emissions reduction. There's tons of other benefits that come with it, like noise, better driving experience, and all this, the rest. But there are pressures for our entire supply chain, not just for vehicles, not just for batteries, but for everything, to do things in a more sustainable way. And so I think as this industry matures, we're going to find better ways to mine, better materials. Maybe we don't need to rely on cobalt. Maybe we can bring, you know, another carbon and other things into play. So using that as an excuse to not move forward, I don't think is healthy for the industry. It's not healthy for our planet, but we do need to keep putting pressure on being better and really thinking about that entire life cycle.
Absolutely. And I believe that as an industry, we're shining a light on the poor practices of, you know, within the mining industries. And we're obviously pressing for, I think there was some recent agreements signed in Canada, actually, that were all focused on fair mining, or, you know, sort of fair trade or fair process of mining. So I think we as an industry are now making the differences in the areas that they've been used for ages. Cobalt didn't just come along for batteries, right? It's been used in industry for a long time and misused, probably. But we're already moving on from cobalt, and we're already moving into newer things. But one of the things that often gets thrown about is that these batteries don't last 10 minutes. You know, like 2 years in, we're going to see massive degradation. We're going to have to replace the battery at £20,000 cost and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I do know that Geotab have had a lot of experience in this, and particularly from the purchase of Fleet Karma, which is where I think you worked historically. Is that right? You were at Fleet Karma first? Is that right?
Well, if we wanted go into a mini story here, I was actually a customer of Fleet Karma when I was managing the programs with Plugin BC. And we introduced a program to help support fleet electrification. And so I knew the folks at Fleet Karma. It was a small industry in Canada working on EV at the time. And so we came up with a program in this province to get these dongles, put them in about a dozen different fleets, have them drive normal for 3 months. And then afterwards, they would get a report saying, you know, here are the vehicles that would be best suited to replace with EVs and which EVs and what would be the estimated TCO. So that's how I first got introduced to Fleet Karma and then
Geogrid. Charlotte, you've broken a cardinal rule.
I used an acronym.
You used an acronym.
He's on you. Boom, straight in there.
Like a chicken on a bone.
You know, there's an acronym in your title, EV Cafe.
Shh, don't tell anybody. You're quite right. It is the electric vehicle cafe. But I suppose it's become a generic phrase now, hasn't
yes.
it, for electric vehicles, he says, trying to dig himself out of a very obvious hole. But so, Charlotte, tell me what you've learned over the years with regard to this battery degradation piece, because obviously Geotab have got a massive amount of data points, and certainly from the experience of Fleet Karma working particularly in EVs over a long period of time with thousands of vehicles, I think. Tell me what we've learned so far.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of the exciting thing about being with Geotab and the unique position with the telematics and the data that we have coming off these vehicles is that because EVs, it's such a new technology, and yeah, it's been around now. They've been around for more than a decade, but there's still, you know, we still need to build confidence in the technology, and there's still a lot of unknowns. So for, you know, a telematics company that's been monitoring EVs for this long, as well as monitoring over 3.5 million vehicles worldwide, what can we learn by leveraging that data on aggregate about, you know, the performance and about the opportunity to transition commercial vehicles to electric? So, one of the analyses that we've kind of looked into is battery health for EVs and trying to understand, you know, how quickly are these batteries degrading and what can that tell us about how long we might expect them to last. And yeah, in early days, that was the number one question almost. It was, well, how long will my battery last? And am I going to have to pay 10 grand or more to replace it in 5 years? So we're really trying to kind of dispel that concern and answer it. So we did a study in 2020 looking at some of the early gen vehicles to see what the health is. And just a little bit on battery health and battery degradation. So what do we mean by that? Like, there's not just a single signal that comes off of the vehicle that says my health is X. When we're talking about battery health, we're talking about a battery pack with many cells in it. And, you know, over time and with different, you know, forces or stresses coming into play, different things are happening within that battery. And, you know, over my head on all these processes, but, you know, there's residues, chemical residues that are happening, there's little cracking happening, that's increasing the resistance within the battery. And overall, what that means is really two things. One is the ability for that battery to hold energy, or which we call capacity. It'll decrease over time, and that's natural, even if you don't use the battery. Its ability to hold energy will decrease. And the other thing that happens is with the increase in resistance, the ability to provide power also decreases. Now, when it comes to EVs, the power piece doesn't really impact the driver. It's really the total energy, because that impacts your total range, ultimately. So for us, what we did was we want to just try to observe and calculate what that capacity is in these vehicles at any given time, and then plot that over a time graph to see, you know, compared with when that vehicle was new, how much energy is it able to store today? And that gives us kind of that estimated average decrease. What we saw in 2020 was that the average degradation rate per year was at 2.3%, which in the grand scheme of things isn't very high. I think we expected it to be higher, truthfully, but yeah, 2.3% per year.
Were all those vehicles being operated in North America and in particular Canada, or was it across the world? Where was the pool of vehicles?
Yeah, the pool of vehicles for that study was, I want to say the majority, if not all at the time, was in Canada and the US, but across states and across provinces. Recently did another look at battery health, and that included passenger vehicles in Europe as well. And this newest study, we didn't include the very first, like the early gen vehicles. And the number, it went from 2.3% per year to 1.8% per year. So it's getting better. And that indicates to me like it may be an improvement in the battery management system that these, can't say OEMs because that's an acronym, these automakers are engineering. But this is average. So every individual vehicle, there's a lot of variability and variety within that. So the other question that often comes up is, well, you know, what might increase the degradation, or what should I avoid? And it's hard to give a concrete answer, because we're just looking at EVs that are being run in their natural environment. So in fleets, on the route. So we're not controlling for every factor and then looking at one factor at a time. This isn't a scientific study. It's just observing how these vehicles are performing in the real world. But what we can do is we can start pulling out cohorts of vehicles that have commonalities. So when we pull out the cohort of vehicles that happen to reside or drive in hotter climates, we do see the average increase a little bit in terms of the rate of degradation. And particularly when we look at that cohort and those within that cohort that use a higher frequency of DC fast charging. So what that tells us is there's a correlation between hot temperatures and DC fast charging that is causing more stress to that battery, and so causing that battery to degrade slightly faster than if they weren't subjected to those factors.
Wow.
Yeah, crikey, you're good, aren't you? You really know your stuff.
It's like, wow.
Charlotte, you've been in this industry for a long time, and you've been through many, many projects to get that level of understanding and knowledge of the marketplace. What are you proudest of having delivered through your career thus far?
Oh, no, you can't ask that. My whole career, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can answer or pick one thing. So what I really enjoy with Geotab and my work there is working with our data analytics team on these kind of big picture questions. And so there's been several projects that we've undertaken trying to answer. So one was the battery degradation and battery health. Another one is the impact of temperature and speed on EV efficiency and range. And then we've also looked at kind of on a macro scale, based on how commercial vehicles are used today, what is the opportunity to electrify using the knowledge of performance in different climates and different temperatures. Then we can predict, you know, here's the true range capabilities and what that means in terms of true electrifiability if the fleets were not changing anything within their operations. We of course know that's you know, not necessarily going to happen. They may have to change, but even without any change, this is what the opportunity is. And so, yeah, I think for me, being in the industry for so long, you kind of hear the same the same concerns or the same questions over and over and over again. And so some of them are legit, but just being able to really take a deep look at the data and say, well, we actually can help answer this, or we can start to say, yeah, we know that winter will decrease your range, but why and by how much? And then that turns it from, you know, a fear that, oh, well, I live in a colder climate, so my EV won't be able to work for me, to, well, this is how much you can expect to lose in your range. And so, yeah, maybe you don't need to be worried because you have more than enough, or maybe you can preheat your cabin before you go out on a drive and make it work that way. And so it just builds that, you know, data driven like explanation and builds confidence in the market as a whole. And so, yeah, I'm just really proud to be able to contribute to the industry in this way.
How do you reconcile what you do? There are days when I look at the world as somebody who's been in this industry now for 12 years, and I think the part I play in helping to discover and quantifying what happens in our automotive sector and being able to give evidence to back up my assertions is so minuscule in the scheme of things. My impact is so tiny when we have, you know, BP, Shell, huge oil companies who are doing massive harm to our world. And some days I get overwhelmed by a feeling that I'm inadequate because I can't affect enough change quickly enough at a scale that can make a difference. How do you deal with that scale of challenge? You're somebody who embraces environmentalism and sustainability in its widest sense, and even you can only have a limited impact. Doesn't that drive you nuts?
May I recommend deep breaths?
Not known for deep breaths.
it is a challenge, and it's a challenge when everyone starts to think that way, because then nothing happens. So, and there's a bit of a balance in recognizing kind of the span of this challenge and how much has to change in order for us to overcome it, and feeling like a little bit paralyzed versus kind of ignoring it and then not doing enough about it. So it's trying to find that balance. And I think for me, just knowing that there are others in the same, in their like unique individual area contributing, and all of that adds up. And I think the more individual contributors who start to collaborate with others, and you know, it grows, and no one can do it on their own. And you know, Geotab as a telematics company, we can't solve this on our own. We need partnerships. We need others to step up, but we can't expect them to step up if we don't. So that's the same for me individually. You know, you can't just say, well, it's not worth it, I'm not making enough of a difference, so I'm going to give up. And hopefully, you know, enough people can help drive that change. And that's how change happens in this world.
Oh, do you know what? That's fabulous. That if we could clip that out and keep that,
we will.
Oh, I think that's magnificent. That's the greatest exposition of collaboration I have ever heard. Well done, you.
Thank you.
I would agree with it completely, because I think if we have that sense of being on our own and not build. So I mean, the EV Cafe, we build a community. That's what we want to do: build and connect people. And you've articulated that beautifully, in a sense that gives us hope, right? You've gone, well, yeah, okay, I'm only one company, I'm only one person, but I'm connected to this person, and they're doing their bit, and they're doing their bit. We can together move this thing. I mean, I put something on LinkedIn today. So I wrote three letters to, well, there were emails actually, but there were three letters to government, because government here in the UK are thinking of changing some of the deadlines, or it seems that way, and we're not getting, they're capitulating is what we're saying. So I wrote three emails to three ministers within government. And on the one hand, I just went, is there any point in me doing this? is there any point in me doing this? I'm not sure. And then I put it on LinkedIn and some people have commented. And so, you know, so you've reached out to a few more. But if I had the mindset of, if I don't do it, you know, because who am I, then nobody else would do it. And, you know, but you've articulated it beautifully, better than I've just murdered it, basically.
We'll make sure I go on LinkedIn and share your comment.
do that. I think I know the answer to this, but I'd like to know how it looks. Who's been the biggest influence for you? I mean, let's take your work journey, because I think we understand what got you to what started you in the sciences and the passion for the environment. But on your work journey, who has been your biggest influence and why?
Oh, yeah, that's a hard one to answer. I would say I'm not one to kind of have a single hero. I think a lot of people influence me in different ways. For me, the community who's been working in EVs is just really inspirational. There's amazing people in the industry right now, and have been for many years as well, where no one really knows exactly what they're doing because it's all so new. And so everyone's kind of learning together and just being part of that community and that group and learning from each other. You know, there's not a lot of egos in that space. It's really more, okay, well, I'm trying to figure out, you're laughing, maybe you have.
I'm just laughing because there's quite a lot of egos on this call, okay. But they're just not you, us two. But anyway, we're nice egos, we're not nasty egos.
Yeah, and part of you mentioned the Women of EVs, so WEVs, that I'm part of. And yeah, there's some really inspiring women who are working in this space. Mm. And that whole organization, I mean, it started with some women in the Pacific Northwest who's been at this for a while as well. And the whole idea is it's encouraging women at every stage in their careers who are working in EVs to help each other. And the motto is elevate her. And it's really just be each other's cheerleader and, you know, support each other and, you know, make sure if someone's going to a conference and they feel kind of outcast, knowing that there's a community there already, they're kind of there to support. So it's just really nice to have, to feel that I'm part of, you know, this community. And so the inspiration comes from, individuals who are ahead of me in their careers, individuals who are behind me in their careers, both men and women who are in the EV industry, and people in general who are not afraid to question the status quo as well. As a kid, some of those environmentalists, especially the young ones, you know, who are making a stand and say, well, actually, why are we doing it this way? That's really inspiring. So yeah, lots of inspirations. Brilliant. I can't name one person.
No, but that's great, because it does mean that, one, you'll never be let down, because, you know, we often put our, or some people will put their faith or be inspired by people, and then suddenly something comes out that is discouraging or disappointing. And of course, if you, it's almost like spread betting, isn't it? Put lots of bets on lots of people, and then eventually you'll not be disappointed. You'll be getting something back from everywhere. And then if one drops off the map, it's not going to matter. So it's encouraging to know that there's such a community around you, and that you've firmly embedded yourself in that mindset of community. John?
I'm wondering what success looks like for you. Is it everybody in EVs and understanding exactly how they work and what they do? Or is there something more high-minded and set in a greater value that you have for the world? What is it that success would mean to you? What is it that drives you to do what you do every day?
Yeah. How big picture do you want to go here? I mean,
you
success...
go as big as you like.
Okay. Success to me is having a system, a world community and society where we are not being wasteful with the resources and the things around us, which means, yeah, and ultimately for me right now, my number one priority is zero emissions. Like, let's tackle climate change, but alongside, let's, you know, keep biodiversity. Let's make sure that people are supported and healthy, and communities are healthy. A big part of that is improving our systems so that they're run more efficiently. And, you know, we don't have, in the transportation world, it's the transition to zero emission technology. It's also looking at, you know, modal shift. Are we moving something by truck where it could be run by train, and could it be electric train? Are we sending, you know, with our supply chain, are we sending materials around the world 3 or 4 times before it gets back to the end consumer's hands to just throw out the next day? So yeah, success to me, I mean, this is more how our systems are set up right now in our world, and being more, you know, effective and efficient and less wasteful with those systems.
What's really interesting is I live in Scotland, and Scotland has a really strange mix of urban conurbations, 7 cities, a few towns, an awful lot of wilderness, but people live there. There's a rurality, which is a real challenge for us in terms of mobility. How do we keep people in rural locations connected with vital services? I guess, never having been to Canada, but I guess that it's even worse in Canada. It's monstrous. How do we square the circle where we need to keep people connected to physical services, but we need to decarbonize our transport systems? Do we just hit the urban conurbations? Do we just concentrate on cities and towns and accept that the rural nature of our country means that people just have to do the best they can to stay connected?
I don't think we have to divide it necessarily in that way. I mean, there are challenges with people who live in more rural communities in terms of if we're talking specifically about electric vehicles, just in terms of range and infrastructure. But there's also a lot who live in that situation where they're not driving that far on a day-to-day. Maybe there's an opportunity to electrify their commuting car and then have maybe a shared vehicle for longer trips. I'm also really passionate about, you know, car sharing and the car share world and kind of the intersect between that and connected and electric. So I mean, as an example, my dad lives out in like rural Ontario, and they don't have a gas vehicle. They drive electric, so he's made it work. I think there's, especially with longer range EVs, and especially looking at, you know, how these vehicles are being used. Often there's households with 2 or 3 vehicles who live out there. So maybe we start with, okay, turn one of those vehicles into electric and just use your local driving with that vehicle. And when you have to use the gas, and it's not, we don't need to change. There is a crisis, so we do need to accelerate, but I'm going to use the low-hanging fruit term. There's opportunities that we can tackle today that can make a big difference without having to fix everything overnight. Let's start there.
Very often it's not the technology that's the challenge. It's the mindset that is the challenge. Your parents have been making it work since 1970. sustainability is embedded in their thinking. It's in your DNA. You can see it as clear as day. And it is about a mindset that says, I can do better for this planet. I can make the resources go further. I can avoid doing certain things, and I will.
Yep, well said.
Bless you.
And actually, Charlotte, everything that you've said in the last few minutes, particularly around, you know, what success looks like, and in answer to John's question there around the rurality of our environment sometimes, shows me why Geotab is such a good fit for you. Because, you know, I've been sort of close to Geotab for a few years now, and recognize that push for sustainability and efficiency that almost trumps moving to electric, you know, in a sense. So if you could get a 10% saving in fuel economy, it's the equivalent of taking 10 out of 100 trucks off the road and putting the electric ones on the road. So if we can do both and, so show where people can move to electric, but also show where they can drive immediately that sustainability message and drive better, get the mindset right today rather than wait to get an electric car or wait to be sustainable until I can, you know, drive an electric car. But in the meantime, I'm just going to drive like an idiot and accelerate hard and brake hard and do all of those things. It's changed today, isn't it? And then that whole, the connected vehicle, understanding the uses of vehicles, the rurality and vehicle sharing and kind of making vehicles accessible through technology, as in to be able to get in and out of them and use them at any time. So it must feel really good, a really good fit for you at the moment with Geotab. Would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not, a lot of people think of it as an ordered thing. So, okay, or just jump straight to electrification, but exactly what you said, there's so many opportunities to just be more optimized and be more efficient with the assets that you have. And at the same time, you don't have to fix that before going electric. You can do both at the same time. So for example, you know, if you have, you know, underutilized, way too many vehicles than you actually need, they're not being sent on, you know, the right routes, or they're being sent multiple times when a single trip could have done the job for the operations that you have or the work that you need to do, you know, switching that to electric, there's still those inefficiencies in your fleet.
Of course.
So yeah. But by, you know, optimizing your routes and by improving, you know, right sizing your vehicles, maybe you don't need that massive pickup truck where a passenger car or a sedan can do the same thing if it's just moving people on, you know, paved roads, and it's saving money. It's saving the business money ultimately. So it's really a win-win-win situation. And by optimizing those vehicles, all of a sudden the total cost of ownership of going electric makes a lot more sense, because you're actually using that vehicle for the work, and you're not wasting that asset. I think again, it's kind of more systems thinking around how can I do what I need to do with the least amount of input, and ultimately take those assets and switch them to zero emissions as well.
It's brilliant that somebody so passionate about sustainability can be so rounded in the way that they're delivering sustainability, understanding the mindset of people as we are, but helping them move forward without having to, you know, deal with the low hanging fruit, but also help other people come along the journey too. Really good. Thank you.
I've got a horrible last question. and it's not a horrible question in and of itself, but I suspect you will be challenged by it, because this can't be backed up by data or research or experience or anything. I'm going to give you a magic wand and give you an opportunity to change one thing about our industry instantly. What would you change for the good?
How powerful is my wand?
It's the all-seeing eye of wands. It is the biggest wand with the biggest power.
Yeah. See, yeah, one thing. See, the problem with your question...
So get on with it.
So this is the thing within our industry, and you know, trying to switch to decarbonization electric vehicles. You know, you can focus on the supply of the vehicles. You can focus on the technology. You can focus on the infrastructure. But changing one thing isn't going to do it because everything's interrelated, and this is a complex transition that we're asking our transportation sector to make. And so fixing one thing over here, you still have this, you know, ecosystem of other things that need to happen, training and supply and change management within the fleet. So yes, you're right, this is an unfair question.
It's incredible to watch your mind work. Because we've asked this question of many, many very learned people, and there's a different approach every time we ask this question. But most people will go and say, you know, I'll have everybody able to teleport themselves around the world so that there are no emissions. You know, that kind of big, broad, sweeping statement. But to watch your mind at work, it's very clear to me that you are somebody who puts that you need to put things into categories and boxes, and you consider the wide aspects of a problem, but you break it down into bite-sized chunks. It's a very methodical, science-based, data-driven approach to things. Are you like that in everything?
I don't know, probably. I definitely overthink things. So.
I love it. The world needs more you, because the trouble with people like me and Paul is that we are led by our hearts, and we are just going, yeah, let's do it. Yay! And we'd go run off a cliff if we thought it would make a difference. Whereas you're there saying, hang on a second, that cliff, it's like 300 foot down and you're going to die. And the world needs more you.
Yeah, that's brilliant. It is brilliant. But it's interesting. I think, you know, if I was in the room and sort of suggested, well, Charlotte, what about, I would say mindset. So, because mindset affects everything, right? So if you can kind of change the mind in the individual across all of those disciplines, because the technology is the technology, and it'll move at the pace that it'll move. But if we all went, actually, do you know what? This is a really good idea. And so my wish, based on your scientific summary, is – I know, I just took the wand back.
You can't do that.
My wish is to change people's mindset to so that everybody embraces your brilliant ideas.
Well, if I'm gonna actually answer your question and have to pick one thing, I'm gonna throw in my bid right now. I think it would be magically updating our electric grid to be, you know, a robust renewable energy. So that, because that is going to be, there's going to be trillions of dollars and a lot of hard work to get us there. And it's needed for this transition, not just for EVs, but for anything we need energy for. So that'll be
so my magic wand. Extending all over the world, please. So or just the UK is actually fine. You know, you don't have to do
actually,
America.
Actually, I'm starting with Canada.
Yeah, start with Canada, UK next. Okay. Right. It's a limited magic wand. It works one country at a time. Brilliant. Well, Charlotte, listen, this has been a fantastic conversation. You know, we've got wonderfully to know you a little bit more. We've understood some wonderful stuff about the data and the insight, ultimately, that Geotab bring into this space. And it's been a pleasure, as John says, to watch your mind at work and obviously share some brilliant thoughts. But I also love that real connection to the community that comes out loud and clear, you know, so the connection to the women's sort of women in EV, the community of EV, these people that have been around you for a long time and influencing you for a long time. And a nod of the cap to, or doff of the cap to your parents, who have brought into the world a very powerful and passionate young lady that is going to leave a massive mark on the world as you go through it. And we've had a joy. It's been a joy to get to know you today. So thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you. You're very kind. It was a pleasure.
Good. John, any final thoughts on this wonderful conversation?
Yeah, it's actually to just to ask questions of people more, because I think what I've discovered about Charlotte, I didn't know you, Charlotte. I didn't know of your work. And what I've discovered is that if you search long and hard, you can find some brilliant people who all add that little bit. And I think your exposition of collaboration is what I'll take away from this, that we all have our little part to play, and no one of us will have the complete answer, but together we just might be able to solve it. And that may mean that we have to address our prejudices, our thinking. We have to extend our arms and say, it doesn't matter that you're from another country, of another gender, of another color, with other drivers that you want to achieve. If we're all heading in the same direction and we all share that common goal, we actually stand a chance.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
And so say all of us. Listen, Charlotte, been fantastic. Thank you. It's early in the day over there in Canada, and you are definitely our furthest guest so far on the podcast. We have had somebody from another country, actually from Geotab as well, actually, but certainly the furthest away with an 8-hour time difference. So thank you for spending some time with us this morning in your world, but this evening in ours. And guys, I want to encourage you just to head over to the Geotab website. Do have a look at that, and you can see stuff on battery degradation there, which will encourage you, give you the support and the some of the data that Charlotte has already shared with us, and give you some, you know, positive stuff to talk down the pub when everybody goes, "Ah, batteries are going to die." No, they're not, and we've proven it. And Charlotte said 2.3 to 1.8 battery management systems is all there. So thank you, Charlotte, for sharing all of that with us, and for Geotab for putting that type of stuff in place. And, of course, for more podcasts and more fun and mayhem from the EV Cafe, do head over to our website, evcafe.org, and all of our podcasts and webinars and all of the good things like that are there. Thank you ever so much for listening, and we look forward to seeing you again sometime soon. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye, thanks.